Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Well, major movements today in the confirmation process of Judge Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court. Two key lawmakers who had been straddling the fence announced their likely votes. The big decision is expected tomorrow. The question is this a done deal? And if so, what does it mean in a variety of ways? What does it mean to the Me Too movement? What does it mean for the court? What does it mean for the confirmation process? And obviously, politically, what does it mean for the two major parties, especially as the midterms arrive? We have two guests to help us tonight to drill down on the issue, and we have you on the phone lines. They are open, 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We'd like to hear your thoughts on an issue that has dominated the news, obviously, for the last month. In studio with us is A. Scott Bolden, attorney and political analyst and former chair of the National Bar Association's Political Action Committee. On the phone line, Justin Hansford. He's the executive director of the Thurgood Marshall Center for Civil Rights here at Howard University. Thank you both for joining us
tonight.
Thank
you, Vermonte.
Thank you.
Mr. Hansford, let's start off with the two key lawmakers announcing how they'll move today, Collins, Flake, and even Murkowski, but, you know, she kind of is in the minority too. Let's talk about your reaction to those announcements today. Were you surprised at what Collins and Flake did, and Collins really taking the forefront, having a 45-minute sort of speech on the Senate floor this afternoon?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me, and I'm very honored to be on with your esteemed guest as well. And I can say that I was not surprised. I think that, unfortunately, this confirmation process has become primarily a political process. And if you look at much of the commentary around the decision, you saw that there were political calculations made by the senators. And you could follow the political calculations and lead to the logical conclusion of how they would likely vote. And those calculations ultimately proved accurate. And it's unfortunate because many people around the country still uphold a vision of the Supreme Court and of the law in general and the court system in general as an impartial arbiter of justice that weighs facts from an objective perspective and comes up with conclusions that represent equal justice under law. Unfortunately, for many people around the country, this entire process has revealed that law is ultimately politics. We know that the U.S. Supreme Court is the final arbiter of all of our laws in the United States, especially our federal laws in particular. And we now see that on a 5-4 basis, those decisions are going to be made by individuals who are appointed through a very political process. And it's going to be, unfortunately, I believe, a black mark on the reputation of the U.S. Supreme Court and ultimately the process of American law itself. Now, many of us who fight for civil rights are already clear on our understanding that things from slavery to Jim Crow to mass incarceration have always been outside of the realm of justice when it comes to how the law is applied. But this is simply a reaffirmation that many of the important legal questions and questions of justice that are going to come before the court over the next few years, affirmative action, something I'm very interested in, police violence.
So, Justin, I want you to hold your thought for a minute because you hit on a couple of things, and I want A. Scott Bolden sort of to jump in here if I can. And I should mention, too, that Joe Manchin, the senator from West Virginia, was also one of those on the fence. And he said, a Democrat, that he would vote for Kavanaugh when that vote is taken, we expect, tomorrow. So, Scott, your thoughts on what played out today? Surprised?
I wasn't surprised that Manchin, who's 10 points ahead in his Senate race in West Virginia, where Donald Trump won by about 40 points, I wasn't even surprised at Flake. You know, Flake talks a good game against Donald Trump. He appears to want to be the conscience of the Senate. But if you look at his voting record, he votes 98% plus with the GOP and Donald Trump, despite his machinations from the floor and elsewhere. With Murkowski out of Alaska, was not surprised at her voting no. You know, she doesn't know the GOP anything. She ran as a write-in when the GOP
moved against
her.
With a difficult
name to spell. With a difficult name to spell.
They spell
from
out,
Alaska.
Right?
And while she is thorough in her analysis and her review, she voted no. I am surprised at Collins. They must have offered her a lot. And she is not up for re-election till 2020. She clearly wasn't impressed with the women's PAC or independent PAC in Maine who promised to give or raise $1 million for her opponent if she voted for Kavanaugh. I am surprised at her 45-minute tortured presentation that seemed to say that I believe Dr. Ford, but not so much where I'm going to vote against Judge Kavanaugh. You can't have it both ways. I'm a former sex crimes prosecutor from New York. The victims of sexual abuse and misconduct, they are believable. Only 1-2% of those over the history of our criminal justice system have been found to have lied about being attacked. Small details are never at the forefront of their consciousness. Big details. I know who did this. I know who touched me inappropriately. I know who assaulted me. You know, you can't find something if you're not looking for it. This limited investigation report that was called for a week with a limitation, I could support that, but I can't support not looking for corroboration of those three alleged sexual victims, because corroboration tells you a lot about whether they're telling the truth. Now, if you don't talk to the corroborators, and you don't talk to the victim, and you don't talk to the alleged bad actor, then you're setting up a situation where the FBI report is going to be inconclusive. It's going to be his word against her word. And so if you're really looking for truth, then you talk to more people within that week. But if you're just looking to get a confirmation, then you limit it and move forward. This was all about politics, not the truth, about partisanship, about power, about white male privilege, and paying back the debt owed to white evangelicals who have stood with GOP and tolerated Donald Trump's political nonsense and rhetoric in exchange for getting justices who they believe will overturn Roe v. Wade.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tonight, our focus is on the Brett Kavanaugh nomination. It looks like it will go through based on the comments from senators today, and it looks like there will be a vote in the U.S. Senate tomorrow. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We'd like to hear from you. The phone lines are open. Justin Hansford, A. Scott Bolden talked about Susan Collins, saying that he was surprised at her position, her 45-minute speech. But of those 45 minutes, was this a way of her, some might say, getting her 15 minutes of fame, or will this come back to haunt her? Because there's still some speculation of whether she will even run for re-election. And I know some in Maine say if she does, they will make sure they have some candidates to run against her.
Well, I would say that to follow on A. Scott Bolden's point, it's very difficult to see how anyone can have it both ways and believe the accuser and also vote to allow Judge Kavanaugh to become Justice Kavanaugh, unless, and I think this may actually be the scariest thing, that people who are Republican senators do indeed both believe the accuser and still, in spite of that, would like to see Judge Kavanaugh become a Justice Kavanaugh. The reason that they could want to see somebody who may be guilty of the horrific acts be a member of the U.S. Supreme Court is because there is such a commitment to these political outcomes that if you weigh it in the balance, or if they've weighed it in the balance, they would be okay with just Judge Kavanaugh, who committed these acts, becoming a Justice Kavanaugh who will vote the way they want the votes to go on all of these political questions, whether it be affirmative action, whether it be Roe versus Wade, on down the line. And that right there is a scary commentary on the state of our community. And so I would think that that would be this something that people should really think and pause and consider the level of partisan bickering reaching the point where people are willing to oversee almost anything. I was telling a friend of mine, they could very well believe he could be guilty of having many other problems, and they still would want him to be on the Supreme Court as long as he votes the way they want him to vote on Roe versus Wade. And that is, to me, that's a despicable position for any public servant to have.
But you know, Vermonte, you don't even have to go that far. If you didn't want to deal with the sexual abuse allegations or attacks, you could look at his unhinged presentation vis-a-vis judicial temperament. You could look at how misleading and the lack of credibility on how much he drank and how much he overdrank, because that presentation brought out people who were supportive of him to say, you're lying about how much you drank and whether you ever passed out or not. But also the partisan attacks during his presentation. His presentation told you who he was. His first presentation told you what type of justice he would be. His third presentation, the write-up in the, the Wall Street Journal, told you what he would be as a jurist. Now, of those three presentations, he told you and showed you who he was right now. And you got to believe that. And those two issues alone, temperament and misleading or lying about the drinking, was more than enough to say he shouldn't be on the Supreme Court.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tonight we're talking about the Supreme Court, the U.S. Senate, what the Kavanaugh nomination and possible confirmation will mean if it goes through. Let's go to the phone lines, and Jacqueline calling from Upper Marlboro. Go right ahead, Jacqueline.
For giving me an opportunity to speak. I had two reactions to the entire affair. The first thing is that, women, we have just simply got to organize and start using our political power. I attended the Women's March, which was, you know, thousands of women from all over the country. Since that march, not a single person has ever contacted me and asked me to do something politically. We need to do that. We need to take that same power and show people we are serious. And we need to do that beginning with Sue Collins. She should not ever be allowed to represent the state of Maine again, and women need to show our political clout in making that possible. My second comment is about the Democrats. The joke that's often told about the Democrats is that they can win elections, but they can't govern. And I think this is an opportunity that where we see that coming to light when you look at the behavior of the senator from West Virginia. The answer to him should be, look, just like the Republicans stick together through thick and thin, you need to vote the right way, or there will not be another dime of Democratic money going behind you to support. Here's the reality of West Virginia. He's lost it anyway. I mean, the state was carried by Trump. It's not going to change 10-point swing to him one way or another based on this vote. Well, you have to stand for something. And I think what's happening to those of us who are voting solely along the line of identity politics is we're not using our clout effectively to make people see that we are serious.
Well, thank you so much.
And that is my reaction to all of this.
Thank you
we
so
much. We now have two perverts.
Thank you so much, Jacqueline. She took a shot there right at the end. In terms of Joe Manchin, before we take a break, I mean, his issue is that, yes, you know, Trump, you know, won West Virginia, but he's probably calculating that he's still leading in the polls, and he might be able to hold that lead if he shows that he can sort of bend to the side of the Republicans in terms of what they want and some of his constituents in West Virginia. So we shall see on that. So we're going to continue this conversation. So if you are on the phone line, stay right there. We will get to you. And that includes you, Yvonne. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on HRR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher, where it was a big day on Capitol Hill today, especially in the U.S. Senate. And as it relates to the confirmation, Supreme Court confirmation issue surrounding Brett Kavanaugh, it looks as if he is on his way to being confirmed. A 51-49 vote today to close off all debate and move it to a final Senate vote tomorrow. And senators made it known where their vote will be tomorrow. And if they stand by that, it looks like Kavanaugh will be confirmed as the 9th Supreme Court Justice. We are talking about that tonight, what that confirmation will mean, what this process has meant for many things, the political environment, the Me Too movement, what it will mean for how the Supreme Court hearings will be handled from here on out. We have two guests joining us tonight in studio, A. Scott Bolden, an attorney and political analyst and former chair of the National Bar Association's Political Action Committee, and Justin Hansford, executive director of the Thurgood Marshall Center for Civil Rights here at Howard University. Phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. A. Scott Bolden, let's talk about the Me Too movement. Does the Kavanaugh confirmation set the movement back or move it forward?
I think it sets it forward. You know, a movement has to be strong. It has to be wildly. It certainly has to have its moments. And every movement doesn't win every fight, but every fight is worth it. And the GOP may have won the justice war, but the Me Too movement in about 5 weeks can win the political war. And that is, in 5 weeks, the midterms are coming. Women, independent, Democratic women, are highly energized. In a month, we're going to be able to choose the Senate and the House. The blue wave, as Democrats and the media describe, certainly has a terrific shot at changing the House. And perhaps if it's a strong enough change in the House, we may be able to pick up enough seats in the Senate to control it. And then we have a buffer between the White House and the nonsense and the policies and the racist, sexist, xenophobic comments and policies coming out of the White House. It is so critically important. And so to my brothers and sisters in the Me Too movement, do not despair. Morning is coming, and we can bring morning on November 6th in this country, but we've got to not just register to vote, we've got to vote, and we've got to vote in mass numbers. And a guy like me from Chicago tell people all the time, vote two or three times if you can figure it out. Just don't get caught at it.
Oh, that's Richard Daley style. Huh?
But it's critical time. It's critical. People know what I mean when I say that.
202-319-7810. Let's go back to the phone lines, continue this conversation. Yvonne calling from Maryland. Go right ahead, Yvonne.
Yes, hi.
Hello.
Oh, yes. I'm very, very disappointed because me being an African lady and have my citizenship, and when I was in Africa, you know, we learned about American democracy. But why now with what we are living here, it seems like it's the same as Africa with dictator. It's not about democracy, where the power is for the people. So now they are showing us that the power is for those in power, mm-hmm. and the people don't have the right to do anything.
Yvonne, I want to have Justin pick up on that point that you just made, because she's talking about the people. Justin Hansford, and he's the executive director, of the Thurgood Marshall Center for Civil Rights here at Howard University. And the people were out. They were in the Senate building being arrested. They were out in front of the Supreme Court protesting, being arrested. Will Kavanaugh's confirmation, if it happens tomorrow, will that sort of have those protests recede, or will that continue in the same way that I asked A. Scott Bolden about the Me Too movement? Will it ramp it up, or do you think it will be looked at, well, that's a losing battle, let's move on to the next one?
Well, it's difficult to tell. I can tell you with my experience coming from the Black Lives Matter movement, many of us have concluded that if Mike Brown's killer, Darren Wilson, had been have had charges brought against him, or if Tamir Rice or any of the other young people's killers, George Zimmerman, if any of them had had charges brought against them and had been found guilty, perhaps the movement doesn't grow in the same way it does, because what people do seem to need is some sort of spark to get up out their seats and to take a moment and turn it into a movement. And I think that with the Me Too movement, you've seen that there has been a great deal of activity that has happened over the course of the past year. But people this week are getting a crash course in the way power works in the United States of America. And the way it works is through the political process, and people, including the Judge Kavanaugh of the world, including the Senator Collins of the world, people get to decide who they're going to listen to and what they're going to see as significant. I think if you listen to Senator Collins talk on the Senate floor, she didn't mention the question of political bias and impartiality that A. Scott Bolden mentioned. She decided to focus primarily on the question of reasonable doubt and standard of proof. And that was her choice because she was the one in power and she gets to choose. And Kavanaugh, soon to be Justice Kavanaugh, will get to choose many things about American life, whether it's, again, it's affirmative action, whether it's the rules around police violence, whatever the case may be, because they'll be the ones with the power. And so I think that the project of obtaining power is something that, especially in the African-American community, we've been ambivalent about for too long. People have used the chant Black Power, but what power really looks like is the taking of political office through the franchise,
yes,
the growth of economic, yes, power, the growth of educational independence in places like Howard University using their power to their utmost. That's what we have to focus on.
Justin, I did want to ask A. Scott this because you mentioned somewhat about seeing the process. And Scott, today we saw the process of that procedural vote or the closure vote. Most folks probably don't know anything about that. You mean they have to vote to be able to close, mm-hmm, off debate. But that also could have closed off his nomination even moving forward. But it was 51-49. Anything surprise you in that closure vote today?
No, the surprise came with whether there were going to be any changes in the individual votes for the vote up or down on Kavanaugh. Now, normally in the Senate process, confirmation process, the closure vote never changes. But you had at least four moderate votes on the Republican side, or three rather, and one Democrat, Manchin, that could have changed their votes despite voting to close off debate. And so for your listening audience, you vote to close off debate, and then you vote up or down in the Senate. I'm not sure it's the same on the House side. But the political power piece that my colleague talked about is so vitally important. Losing state races and Senate races and House races over the last 8 to 10 years has brought us to where we are. Losing and not voting or protesting a vote against Hillary Clinton in 2016 or not voting or voting for someone else. I got to tell you, my brothers and sisters who chose to do that and to stay out of it and not vote for Hillary for whatever reason, you contributed. I want you to listen to me. You contributed to the status of this country. You contributed to who's in the White House, Donald J. Trump. And you even contributed to these two Supreme Court justices of Donald Trump's appointment and GOP approval by the narrowest of margins. Now, you've got to take responsibility for that. But we can also take responsibility that we've got another shot. Perhaps more important is taking the House and Senate back. And whether it rains or shines, if you're registered to vote, if you're not, go register to vote, because this fight was worth it for the Me Too movement and all those who believe in it. This fight was worth it. But make it happen. Make it right, okay, by voting on November 6th and taking control of the House and Senate. That's the only way this losing fight or this fight over Kavanaugh will make any sense to this country, because what we're experiencing is not normal. It's not right. No matter what alternative facts or alternative reality the GOP talks about and Fox News talks about, this is abnormal. This is not right. And it's up to us, a people's movement, to bring us back to normalcy and just human decency and to feel safe as Americans in this country. If you're Black, brown, or if you're a woman, or if you're gay or lesbian, this is not a safe place for us in this country right now. And the GOP has made it that way in part because they fear the browning of America. That's a whole nother debate for another show. But at the root cause of what we're experiencing as people of color is white male and white female GOP fear of the browning of America and losing power. And we've got to address that at some point.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. He is A. Scott Bolden, attorney and political analyst and former chair of the National Bar Association's Political Action Committee. On the line with us is Justin Hansford, executive director of the Thurgood Marshall Center for Civil Rights at Howard University. Let's go back to the phone lines. Reggie is calling from Richmond, Virginia. Go right ahead, Reggie.
Yeah, gentlemen, good evening. You know, the thing that kind of upsets me, in the state of Virginia, we have something called purging of votes. Now, again, all due respect, I heard the individual talk about hordes of voting. But how about the importance of the Democrats not standing up when it came to Persian votes? Case in point, if I have a name named Johnson Williams Lewis, and then in New North Carolina is Johnson William Lee, the name gets kicked off. How many states out there with names purged, and this individual 45 won for maybe 4,000 or 5,000?
Well,
every time we have a debate, we don't hear anything about those kind of rules. And I'm telling you right now, Tim Kaine and Nancy Pelosi and them kept their mouths shut. They couldn't wait to get Representative Conyers out on the rail, even though he might have did something wrong. But yet, when it comes to issues that we fight for, like Roger Graves in the Supreme Court, all of a sudden people's mouths are shut.
Well, let me let the guest dive into that. I think I have to say that I know the voter roll purging has been an issue that has come up and that Democrats have mentioned now.
How several jurisdictions have gone to court over that issue.
Right. So mm-hmm. I do know that. But, you know, Reggie sort of has making the issue to whether real or perception the issues in terms of the Democratic Party. Let me go to you, Justin, on this. That does this Kavanaugh hearing, along political lines, right, in terms of the parties, what will this mean? A. Scott has said, look, Democrats, you've got to go to the polls to vote to sort of change this. But does the Kavanaugh hearing and the apparent confirmation of Kavanaugh sort of boost up the enthusiasm of Republicans? How would you see that playing out?
Well, one thing I have to say is that the hearing, I think more than anything else, allowed a woman to tell her story that sort of broke the dam of pent-up frustrations. And I know there were women around the country and around the world who had stories of their own with sexual assault that decided to come forward in their own personal lives and on the basis of this hearing. And that sort of indelible mark is something that goes so far beyond the capacity of a political party like the Democratic Party to claim credit for. I think it's imperative that the Democratic Party capitalize on this energy and decide. They have to make the decision that they are going to move forward and take very strong stances on sexual assault, on women's rights, on equal rights. And what we saw happen in the immediate aftermath of the election, of the presidential election, was this idea in some quarters of the Democratic Party that they had gone too far in advocating for the rights of minorities or the rights of women, and they had to pivot to appealing more to the Trump voter, the low-income white male voter. And I think that that's simply the wrong calculation. I think that what they need to do is capitalize on the energy that is being generated by these crises that are taking place on the American landscape. Women's rights is one that is so important for them to double down on in terms of issues. And I hope they go in that direction going forward.
Well, they've got a month to really see whether or not drilling down on those issues and what they've been doing leading up to the midterm elections will have an effect. And I know we'll all be watching. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more, obviously, about this issue and about the FBI investigation, where that went. Was it too limited? Could more have been done? And is there anything in this 11th hour that can keep Judge Kavanaugh off the bench if it looks like he's headed to the bench? So we're going to continue the conversation. We've got a little bit of time left, and the phone lines are still open. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. The nomination of Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court, it looks like confirmation is nearing a close. We're going to continue this conversation right after this. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on HRR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Tonight on Insight, we are talking about the Brett Kavanaugh nomination as it seems to be drawing to a close. The expected final vote in the U.S. Senate tomorrow, it looks like Kavanaugh will have the votes by the narrowest of margins and probably the narrowest margin in pretty much a century. It was 51-49 to close off the debate to even move it to a final vote, and it's expected those numbers will probably be the same tomorrow. But, of course, anything can happen, so we all will be paying attention. But tonight, we were focusing on it, and our guest in studio, A. Scott Bolden, attorney and political analyst, former chair of the National Bar Association's Political Action Committee, On the phone line with us, Justin Hansford, Executive Director of the Thurgood Marshall Center for Civil Rights at Howard University. And you, phone lines, like to hear from you. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We can still squeeze in a couple of more questions or comments if you have those. A. Scott Bolden, the FBI investigation, critics say the probe was too limited, was it?
Yes, very much so. I'm a former prosecutor from New York. If you're going to set up a timed investigation or open up the background check and something pops up like drinking, something pops up like a sexual abuse allegation or an attempted sexual assault, then you've got to interview not only the actors. There were only three witnesses to that alleged assault on the first one, but there were several, and Mark Judge could not remember being there because of some health challenges. But there are two other women who came forward. One observed bad conduct, and the other one alleged that he exposed himself to her. And so only the second one was interviewed, the third one was not. And then there were several people who could have corroborated the second accuser and the third accuser, as well as others who could have corroborated Dr. Ford's testimony, that were not interviewed by the FBI on purpose. And so if you narrow the scope, as I said before, you can't find something that you're not looking for. If you're not looking for corroboration which supports the truthfulness of one person over another, and you're going to limit it to one person's word against another, and then you're not going to continue to corroborate the second person who he allegedly exposed himself to, you're not going to invest the over-drinking and the lies about the drinking, whereby even his supporters who went to Yale and went to high school with him said he was lying about, which goes to his character and fitness for the Supreme Court. If you're not going to investigate those, then you're left with the judicial temperament. And from a political partisan attack and how obnoxious he was to Democratic senators, it goes directly to his temperament and his independence. And he was completely inconsistent about it.
So why wouldn't President Trump just move off of him? He had another list. Is it because he knows that Kavanaugh supports not having a president indicted, not bringing him into court, not being able to do things against the president that might come up, and President Trump knows that, and Kavanaugh has stated that? Why not just
probably, but it's all been a rush job. For some reason, the Dems, I think the GOP, in many respects, I think they know the blue wave is coming. And while they don't take office until January after the election in November, I really do think that many of them think that this control can only last so long with Donald Trump in the White House. And so I think pushing this candidate, he was probably the most viable of everyone on the Federalist list that Donald Trump uses. He certainly doesn't support a president being investigated. He's written opinions that lead people to believe that if he has a chance to vote on Roe v. Wade, he certainly is going to vote against it, because he certainly voted against the young immigrant child who needed an abortion, wanted an abortion, and he dissented from that D.C. Circuit opinion that indicated that she did not need permission from her parents or the government to get an abortion, and it forced the federal government to allow her to have an abortion with government funds. And so Kavanaugh seemed to be the right person at the right time. The sexual allegations and the drinking, that put a wrench in the whole process of moving forward quickly and efficiently, so that the GOP before midterms could argue that the GOP had put two conservative justices on versus one. If you wait and go through another round, who knows what will come up, and you're losing time to allow your GOP candidates around the country to argue that we've got two conservative justices, that we've got a 5-4 vote now, and that any and all issues of ours, including abortion, that come before that court, we've got a shot. You ought to vote for me.
Justin Hansford, at this 11th hour, is there anything you believe that can keep Brett Kavanaugh off the Supreme Court bench?
It's very doubtful. I'm aware right now as we speak that Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, the only Republican to vote no on Kavanaugh, is speaking on the Senate floor. And I guess the question is, for anyone of those Republican senators or the Democratic senator who has it in them to change their vote, is very unlikely, but the only question is, who do they really listen to? And I would only assume they would listen to another senator in their party or someone of that nature, in that you know, that very, you know, almost miraculous situation where they would change their vote at the 11th hour. But I don't think we should hang our hopes on that. I think what's more likely to happen is that Kavanaugh will get confirmed. I do think also that we will learn more about his history. I think in 2018, people will continue to dig and find even more type of behavior that was indicated in the sort of quick, short order investigation that happened over the course of 7 days. I think journalists will dig deeper and find even more. There's going to be a great stain on the American judiciary, and for many of us who are lawyers and who are members of the bar and people who practice law, we have to think about the people at the top now and whether we trust them. I think that's a major issue, and I think that the question of following the pursuit of justice is going to get much more challenging after this confirmation, because we can't look to the members of the Supreme Court necessarily as the pace setters if we see it as such a political process and we see people being pushed through for purely partisan reasons and not based on the exemplary nature of their record alone. I think it's a stain on the profession. I think we're going to have to really fight for justice in many different ways than we fought for justice in the past. We're going to have to continue to advocate, not just in the courts, but also in the halls of power and in the streets, wherever we find an opportunity to engage in public education, because the push for justice has to go on, even though the people at the top of the U.S. Supreme Court, you know, seem to be following the political tide of the times.
With that said, Scott, though, I want to ask you in our last couple of minutes, because it may take that much for you to sort of drill down on this. With Kavanaugh likely being confirmed, you'll have a 5-4 sort of right-leaning court, two of those appointed by President Trump. Sort of look at this now as a fait accompli. What is your analysis then of the Supreme Court and how it will be made up possibly after tomorrow?
Well, you're going to have the 5-4 advantage. These are five reliable conservatives. I don't know whether you need or will have a swing vote unless it's one of those five. But let's be real clear. You have two Supreme Court justices that have been accused of sexual misconduct.
Clarence Thomas
being the second one. You have one that has announced his political partisanship. We have two justices that were put in by the GOP in the last 2 years that were just rooted not in polite politics, but political gangsterism. I mean, Kavanaugh's elevation is just purely gangsterism on the part of the GOP. And they're fine with that because the truth didn't matter. The only thing that mattered was partisanship and power and nothing to do with patriotism. So the real question for Kavanaugh and for us is whether Kavanaugh can sit on a number of cases based on his presentation. Does he have to recuse himself, which may be a bigger factor? And is he do the Dems, if they take power, continue to investigate him and impeach him possibly? That's a bad word for Dems now because they don't want to elevate the base.
But again, a Supreme Court justice can be removed.
Exactly, through the impeachment process. And so on one hand, the Dems taking over the House and or Senate will be significant and be a strong buffer. On the other hand, in order to bring righteousness back to this country and normalcy and human decency, the Dems are going to have to be ready to fight for that. And that's not going to be a pretty fight. It's going to need all hands on deck, and it's going to have to be politically strategized, one. And we need to have courage, and we've got to be prepared to fight to do that, because we let this country go, and we put Donald Trump in the White House, and we need to recover from that.
And Justin, I'll give you the last word on this. Your thoughts on the Supreme Court as it looks like it will shape out and shake out after tomorrow.
Well, I want to echo what the guest said. I think that it's important for the fight for justice and righteousness to go forward. I think it's also true that the fight will not be pretty. I think that some of the very aggressive tactics that have been used by the Republican Party, whether it is on cable news or in elections, they're going to have to be answers for those tactics. You don't want to to stoop to low levels to respond, but you are going to have to find a way to match the passion and the energy and the commitment and the power of the organized right wing in some way, shape, or form, and use that type of energy to support equal rights under law and righteousness in not just the law, but also in our broader society, including how we treat women, how we treat each other, and how we treat our fellow Americans. And I think that's our charge going forward. I think all of our listeners should be very enthusiastic about being part of that charge so that we can help to make things right.
He is Justin Hansford, Executive Director of the Thurgood Marshall Center for Civil Rights at Howard University, and in studio, A. Scott Bolden, attorney and political analyst and the former chair of the National Bar Association's Political Action Committee. Both of you, thank you so much for an enlightening and informative conversation tonight. Keep your eyes open. Keep watching. Things will be happening tomorrow, and we'll stay on top of that. We thank all of you for calling in for your questions and your comments and your concerns. That's the Daily Drum on HR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Friday, October 5th. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Up next, The Connection with Lorna Newton. Have a great night and a great weekend.